Welcome to the infamous podcast, Bitch, I'm Not Well. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Brandy.
And we're invested on taking you down to Crazy Town, where we talk about crazy bitches who are truly unwell. All right.
Hey,
today,
girl.
We're going to talk about Betty Broderick. She got jilted, he got kilted.
It's terrible.
Shit's getting real.
We're very sorry and sad for her husband.
Who got guilted? Nope, not her husband. Because he jilted her.
He did jilt her.
So they didn't get married.
No, he jilted her after they was married.
Oh.
Okay. Well, I'm ready to hear this one.
Betty Broderick was born Elizabeth Ann Biscaglia on November the 7th, 1947, and grew up in Bronxville, New York. She was the third of six children born to Marita and Frank Biscaglia.
Yeah,
okay, so Frank, her dad, owned a successful plastering business with relatives. Her mother was Irish-American and her father was Italian-American, in case you didn't catch the last name, Biscaglia.
Okay, that's where it's from.
Mm-hmm.
America, got it.
Her parents were very strict and much was expected of all the Biscaglia children. As Betty later recalled, she was being trained to be a housewife since the day she was born.
That sucks.
Mm-hmm. Or as she recalled, go to Catholic schools, be careful with dating until you find a Catholic man, support him while he works, be blessed in your years later with beautiful grandchildren. She recalled that her school friends were raised under similar circumstances, giving her little chance to rebel. So she could not, you can't buck the system if everybody's.
Yeah, you can't really go out and party if none of your friends want to. I mean, I guess you could, but how much of a party would it be?
But you'd be.
You're not supposed to do this.
Broderick attended Maria Regina High School in Hartsdale, New York, and graduated from Eastchester High School in Eastchester, New York. In 1965, she graduated from the College of Mount St. Vincent in the Bronx.
Wow, I didn't know people, or not people, I didn't know women went to college.
Yeah, like, she went to college.
But probably wasn't very common.
My mama went to college.
She did?
Yeah, she was almost recruited by the FBI.
No way.
To be a secretary at the FBI, thank you.
Why didn't she go?
Only two people were chosen. Well, she didn't go because she married my dad.
Oh, your dad is lucky.
I guess.
You could be a little FBI baby.
I know. This is what I tell her all the time. Mama, you missed your calling. You missed my calling.
Oh, we was going to resolve all kind of crimes.
All kind of crimes.
We'll be like the criminal minds.
Ever.
People.
Okay, so it didn't happen. Okay, because she chose to get married and be a housewife. All right, so anyway.
Pop out you.
She did a great job.
She did.
So anyway, where she went to college in the Bronx, she earned her degree in early childhood education through an accelerated program.
Bless her.
Mm-hmm. Her credits also earned her a minor in English.
That's pretty
She's
cool.
Very well educated.
Yeah. I couldn't be a teacher.
Uh-uh. In 1965, Betty met her future husband, Dan Broderick.
Old Danny boy.
Mm-hmm. She met him at the University of Notre Dame in Indiana.
Oh.
Dan was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and was the oldest son of a very large Irish Catholic family whose parents had similar outlooks as the Biscaglias. Dan and Betty met at a dance in Notre Dame.
I was wondering how they met, because they didn't go to the same college.
Yeah. So he was a 21-year-old senior about to graduate and attend Cornell Medical School.
Well, damn.
At 17 years old, she was pursuing her degree at the College of St. Mary's. Dan never once wavered from his goal of making me his wife, she said. He would wait. He would do and say whatever was necessary, even agreeing with me when he didn't, and doing things I wanted to do when he didn't want to do them, until he had me. Nobody ever used the terms obsessive, compulsive, or stalker back then, but that's what he was.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
All righty.
All right. So the couple married in April of 1969 at the at the Immaculate Conception Church in Tuckahoe.
Tuckahoe where?
Tuckahoe. Is you a hoe?
Tuckahoe.
In Tuckahoe, New York.
Oh, okay, okay.
Betty returned from the honeymoon pregnant with their first child. Bow, chicka, bow, 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 bow. Yeah, getting it.
Getting it.
Getting it on the honeymoon.
We taking care of the honeymoon stuff.
So her daughter Kim was born in 1970. She gave birth to four more children. Another daughter, her name was Lee. Two sons, Daniel and Rhett. And an unnamed boy who died 4 days after birth.
Sad.
It was sad. But after Kim's birth, the first child, Dan completed his MD degree at Cornell in 1970. He then announced his intention to combine his medical expertise with a Juris Doctorate degree and enrolled at Harvard Law School.
Damn.
So while he's doing that, Betty is the main provider teaching elementary school and babysitting while he went to law school. After graduating in 1973, which is pretty fast.
That is fast.
Dan was quickly hired by the largest law firm in San Diego, California.
Oh, we moved across the country.
Moved across the country and moved his whole family in La Jolla.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
They got some nice town names in here.
They do. Betty continued working part-time, often selling Tupperware or Avon products. And this is whenever it was really big. Like to do Tupperware and Avon and Rainbow vacuum cleaners. It was mostly like door-to-door.
Chris said his grandma sold sales. Avon. And she always has the coolest stuff, like NFL videos and stuff. I was like, oh, that's cool. I remember.
And fancy cars. They got.
Yes. They remember the Mary
cars,
Kay
like
pink
the Mary
car?
Kay cars? Yeah.
My friend's mom sold Mary Kay in high school, and I always hoped she'd one day show up with a pink car. That would have been so cool.
That would have been amazing.
She probably wouldn't have let us drive it, but it would have been cool.
But you could have stolen it for a hot minute.
We would have.
Yeah.
She slept pretty hard at night.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
There you go. But she never got the car, so.
So we didn't get to steal
You'll
it.
You'll never know.
I won't. I
what wonder, it's like to drive a Mary Kay car.
I wonder if she still sells Mary
I'm going to find one at auction for you.
Yes, do it. That would be amazing.
All right. So Betty was selling Tupperware and Avon products while raising the children. In 1978, after 5 years of substantial defense litigation work and training as an associate, Dan left the large firm where he was well-regarded and founded his own small boutique law firm specializing in medical malpractice litigation on behalf of plaintiffs. Mm-hmm. Okay. And because of his background as both an MD and a trial attorney, his firm quickly enjoyed success, and he was raking in more than $1 million per year.
Damn, and that was a
this
lot back
This is back in
then.
The 70s, early 80s. Yeah.
Damn.
Lots of moolah. And they were living the typical rags to riches story. You know, you're struggling, you're living in a shoebox, and now you have a mansion and fancy cars and country club memberships and boats and a ski condo.
Dang.
So from the outside, they appeared to have it all.
Did they have a munchkin cat?
They did not have a munchkin cat. So
almost all of them.
Factually, they did not have it all.
You were almost there, though. You almost made it.
Almost there. In the fall of 1982, Dan hired 21-year-old Linda Kolkina.
I don't like where this is going.
A former airline stewardess to be his legal assistant at his new firm, which undoubtedly put Betty on edge as Linda had zero legal experience, no degree, and did not even know how to use a typewriter.
So I wonder what her talents were. They obviously weren't in the office. Well, they were in the office. They weren't in the legal sense.
Yeah, they were more of a physical.
I am very stretchy.
I cannot, very stretchy.
I cannot type, but I can put my foot behind my head.
You are hired.
You've got it, boo. Now, what is this typewriter you speak of, sir?
You don't need to worry about
don't
that.
Don't you worry about that, girl. It's fine.
Oh, gosh. We got Janie Sue. She's going to do that in the other room.
Yeah, don't you worry.
You just stay in here and serve me hot toddies.
Yep,
and
you'll
hot
be
titties.
Right here in here. This is your outfit.
Oh, no.
It's very tiny.
Oh. As early as October 1983, Betty suspected that Dan was having an affair with Linda.
What is that? 1 year?
Like, yeah.
That's not.
That's a year because the fall of 82, he hired her. And the fall of 83, she was like, oh, no, he's sleeping around. But Dan repeatedly denied it, of course, you know, suggesting that Betty was insecure, crazy, all the things. Yeah. In February 1985, Dan finally admitted to having an affair with Linda and moved out of the family home.
Oh.
Now, Betty was so pissed off with rage and just this feeling of betrayal because the whole while he's gaslighting her. So she gaslit all Dan's clothes and watched as they were engulfed in flames.
Oh, my God.
That's right. She was engulfed in rage, and his clothing was engulfed in flames.
She is spelling out crazy for him.
She is.
Fuck you, Dan.
Now, by this time, Dan had become a prominent local attorney, serving as the president of the San Diego Bar Association. So Betty claims that Dan made it extremely difficult for her to find an attorney willing to represent her in the divorce, right?
I can see that,
yeah. I mean, because he's sitting on the board.
He's the head of it.
Yeah. Yep. You're not going to find an attorney Mm-mm. worth his salt to
stand up to this guy, go against him.
Yes. So she was really put at a distinct disadvantage. Betty also believed that Dan used his legal influence to win sole custody of their children, sell their house against her wishes, and cheated her out of her rightful share of his income.
Man, yeah, Betty
would
know.
I can totally see that. Yeah. Especially back then in those days, like, women's rights were very, very far and few between.
I mean, if she was like the stay-at-home caregiver for mm-hmm. her kids,
and
that's
provided
crazy.
For her whole family while he went to all these schools, you know,
that's so messed up.
Yeah, and then he moves on, and then you're just screwed.
Dan did her wrong.
Hmm. So, the divorce was finalized in 1989, 4 years after Dan filed the petition. Now, I don't know why it took so long.
That is a really long time.
I don't know. But Betty's behavior became increasingly erratic. She left hundreds of profane messages on Dan's answering machine and ignored numerous restraining orders that forbade her from setting foot on Dan's property. Oh, she broke into his home, spray painted his bedroom, smeared food all over his kitchen, and I think on receipt of another restraining order, she drove her car into his front door.
Oh my God.
Despite the fact that their kids were home. Like, she didn't
care. Oh, my God. Bitch is putting a whole new, a whole new level of crazy.
She was fresh out of...
Like,
she had no to give, and she was driving through the house.
I guess she figured there's nothing to lose. He took everything.
That's right. So Betty was arrested and held under psychiatric care for 72 hours, I think. On April 22nd, 1989, Dan and Linda were married. Mm. Linda had been very concerned about Betty's behavior and even urged Dan to wear a bulletproof vest at their wedding.
Oh, wow.
Dan refused to do so, although plainclothes security was employed. However, Betty did not attend the wedding and it proceeded without incident. Believe that.
Yeah, that's
shocking. But don't
you
know she was over at her house like drinking and smoking and just
taking
like,
the voodoo doll, stabbing it over yes. and over again with a toothpick?
Trying to calm the crazy.
They should have admitted her then again.
Yeah, just in case. After the wedding, Betty Broderick claimed that Linda taunted her by mailing her facial cream and slimming treatment ads.
Oh.
That would
piss
me off.
Yeah, that would have pissed me off. That would have brought out a whole another level of crazy.
Oh, no.
Like, you thought me driving through your front door was crazy?
You stole my life. You stole my family.
Now you call me fat? And old?
You trying to give me advice? Mm-mm. Beauty advice? Mm-mm. Oh, geez. 1 month before Dan and Linda's wedding, Betty purchased a Smith & Wesson revolver.
So you've been hailed for psychiatric treatment, but you went and bought
you
a gun.
You can go buy a gun.
Okay.
I guess the laws weren't as astringent back then, you know, as they are now. So
went and got a gallon of gas and a Smith & Wesson.
Yeah, hopefully you have to produce some identification and they do background checks. But I can't speak on what happened in the 80s. I don't know. Early one morning, 7 months after Dan and Linda were married, Betty Broderick drove to Dan's house. Betty had taken a key to the house from her daughter, Kim. She entered the house while the couple were asleep and shot and killed them.
Oh, damn.
The murders occurred at 5:30 in the morning on November the 5th, 1989, 2 days before Betty's 42nd birthday.
Oh, my.
So she's 41 gosh. Years old, about to be 42, walks into their bedroom, shot two bullets hitting Linda in the head and chest, killing her instantly. One bullet hit Dan in the chest as he was apparently reaching for the phone. One bullet hit the wall and one bullet hit a nightstand. The incident occurred 17 days before Dan's 45th birthday.
Oh my gosh. Were the kids there?
And Linda was only 28 years old.
Oh my
God. No, the kids were not in the home. Evidence presented at trial indicated that Betty had removed a phone answering machine from Dan Broderick's bedroom so that he could not call for help. So I guess this, when he was reaching for the phone, she went over there and jerked it out the wall. Medical evidence indicated that Dan had not died immediately. Betty claimed that she had spoken to him after shooting him.
Oh my gosh.
After contacting her daughter Lee and Lee's boyfriend, Betty turned herself into police, never denying that she had pulled the trigger. At both trials, Betty claimed that she never intended to kill Dan and Linda, and that her crime was not premeditated. Her account of the murders at her second trial was that she went there to shoot herself in front of the couple, but was startled by Linda screaming, "Call the police," and immediately fired the gun at Linda, then at Dan.
She fired the gun accidentally twice at Linda in the head.
Yeah, I guess she freaked out.
And chest.
Like, oh no, she's going to call the police.
That's a good accidental aim.
Why not just go ahead and point it to your head if that's your intention?
But yeah.
Who am I to say?
Why do you need to do it there?
Yeah. Criminal defense attorney Jack Early represented Broderick at trial. Carrie Wells prosecuted for the state of California. Broderick's defense claimed that she was a battered wife driven over the edge by years of psychological, physical, and mental abuse inflicted by her ex-husband. Maybe he did.
Yeah, she definitely had something going on in that head.
Maybe so. Wells portrayed Broderick as a murderer who planned and schemed to kill her ex-husband, arguing that Broderick was not a battered woman. Forensic psychiatrist and criminologist used the analysis. So they had, let's see, one, two, three different clinical psychologists.
Like evaluate her?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And they all came back with histrionic personality disorder and narcissistic personality disorder.
Now, what is histrionic?
Histrionic, persistent attention seeking, dramatic behavior, rapidly shifting and shallow emotions, sexually provocative behavior. Well, well, well.
Betty, I see you.
Symptoms typically do not fully develop until late teens or early 20s. The duration is lifelong. Causes or authoritarian parenting.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So she was severely narcissistic and histrionic, probably based on her upbringing. The lead detective in the case was Terry DeGelder of San Diego Homicide, who provided testimony for the prosecution. Broderick's first trial ended with a hung jury when two of the jurors held out for manslaughter, citing lack of intent.
Ah, okay. So it wasn't, they didn't think she didn't do it. It was just like, we don't think you murdered them. We think it was manslaughter.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. Precisely.
Precisely.
I mean, you got to go, when you go in, you better know what your charges are.
Yeah.
And exactly what they mean, because
this could happen to you.
This could happen. A mistrial was declared by Judge Thomas J. Whalen. And Betty was retried a year later with the same defense attorney and prosecutor. The second trial was essentially a redux of the first. Prosecutor Wells was successful at the second trial. The jury returned a verdict of guilty on two counts of second-degree murder.
Damn.
Betty was sentenced to two consecutive terms of 15 years to life, the maximum sentence under the law, plus 2 years for the illegal use of a firearm. Got to throw that in there.
Yeah, I mean, you murder people, but you also used a firearm illegally.
That's
to do
right.
It.
Well, wouldn't murdering somebody be illegal?
I was just about to ask like, that. Is murder illegal with a firearm?
Unless she purchased her Smith & Wesson from
Joe Bob on the corner.
Joe Bob on the corner. Maybe that's what they're talking about. In January 2010, her first request for parole was denied by the Board of Parole Hearings because she neither showed remorse nor acknowledged any wrongdoing.
Oh, gosh.
She was again denied parole in January 2017, probably for the same thing. She would not have been eligible for parole again until January 2032, when she would have been 84 years old. She was incarcerated at the California Institute for Women in Chino, California, from the day she committed the murders until her death on May 8th, 2026.
Oh, wow. So she just died.
At the age of 78. All four children were present for her death. On May 8th, 2026, Betty died of natural causes at the age of 78 while in the custody of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation.
Oh, okay.
On April the 18th, she had been transferred from the California Institution for Women to a specialized medical facility in Chino, California, for a higher level of care following a fall that resulted in broken ribs and subsequent septic infections.
Ooh.
Now, I guess you fall in prison.
Probably not the cleanest place to fall.
They're going to be like, oh, here, take an aspirin.
Get up. Army crawl your way back to your cell.
According to her children, she was surrounded by family at the time of her death. And at the time of her passing, she was serving a sentence of 32 years to life and had been denied parole twice, with her next parole eligibility date originally scheduled for 2032.
Dang. That's crazy that both times that she was up for parole, she didn't show any remorse.
No. She's like, I went there.
What more do you want me to say?
But no, I didn't intend to kill him, so I don't know what you're so pissed about.
Yeah, if she wouldn't have woken up, I would be dead and she would probably be here.
That's right. It's her fault.
Like, that's not how suicide works, ma'am.
Her fault. Yeah. She shouldn't have been yelling.
She scared me.
Mm-hmm.
I was scared.
But that's the story of Betty Broderick. And there are like some TV shows about this. I think there might be one on Netflix. Dirty John. Yeah.
Ooh, Dirty John.
Yeah. Amanda Peet plays Betty and Christian Slater plays Dan.
Damn.
I did watch that. It was good. It was really good.
I'm going to have to check it out.
There's also an episode on Oxygen. You know, the show Snapped.
Love that
snapped,
show.
Yeah. She snapped all right.
Oh, yeah. That bitch snapped.
She like I said, she got jilted. He got kilted. Okay.
He got kilted. Him was deep.
Oh, God.
Shit got real.
Yeah. So, guys.
Please don't snap. And maybe don't marry a homicidal maniac.
Don't do that.
I wonder if Linda knew what she was getting herself into.
Because when she died, she was 28 years old.
He was 45.
And this was 5 years.
Oh, dang. She was young.
Yeah.
She was like 23.
Oh, yeah. She's a young girl.
I wonder if she's like close to the age of their kids.
I think only 9 years older than their youngest.
It's gross.
It is gross. I can't even. All right. So we will see you next time with another crazy ass bitch. Who is
unwell.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. We appreciate you listening to our podcast. If you liked it, please give us a good rating. You can listen on your favorite podcast platform with new releases every Friday. Just search for Bitch, I'm Not Well. Send us suggestions for an episode at b.tchimnotwell@gmail.com because Gmail won't let us use bitch. Or visit our website at www.bitchimnotwell.com for more podcasts and our fabulous merchandise.
We'll see you next week on another podcast about another crazy bitch who is truly unwell.